Chapter 65. General talk about the ship, and that they have never had a ship on that voyage aft so long unheard of, and that the captain's wife was at the office yesterday, and seemed a little put out about it, but anyone could say that, we knew nearly that before. Apostrophe, I must visit Walter's uncle, apostrophe said Florence, hurriedly, before I leave home. I will go and see him this morning. Let us walk there, directly, Susan. Miss Nipper, having nothing to urge against the proposal, but being perfectly acquiescent, they were soon equipped, and in the streets, and on their way towards the little midshipman. The state of mind in which poor Walter had gone to Captain Cuttle's, on the day when Broglie the broker came into possession, and when there seemed to him to be an execution in the very steeples, was pretty much the same as that in which Florence now took her way to Uncle Sol's, with this difference, that Florence suffered the added pain of thinking that she had been, perhaps, the innocent occasion of involving Walter in peril, and all to whom he was dear, herself included, in an agony of suspense. For the rest, uncertainty and danger seemed written upon everything. The weathercocks on spires and housetops were mysterious with hints of stormy wind, and pointed, like so many ghostly fingers, out to dangerous seas, where fragments of great wrecks were drifting, perhaps, and helpless men were rocked upon them into a sleep as deep as the unfathomable waters. When Florence came into the city, and passed gentlemen who were talking together, she dreaded to hear them speaking of the ship, and it saying it was lost. Pictures and prints of vessels fighting with the rolling waves filled her with alarm. The smoke and clouds, though moving gently, moved too fast for her apprehensions, and made her fear there was a tempest blowing at that moment on the ocean. Susan Nipper may or may not have been affected similarly, but having her attention much engaged in struggles with boys, whenever there was any press of people for, between that grade of humankind and herself, there was some natural animosity, that invariably broke out, whenever they came together it would seem, that she had not much leisure on the road for intellectual operations. Arriving in good time abreast of the wooden midshipman on the opposite side of the way, and waiting for an opportunity to cross the street, they were a little surprised at first to see, at the instrument maker's door, a round-headed lad, with his chubby face addressed towards the sky, who, as they looked at him, suddenly thrust into his capacious mouth two fingers of each hand, and with the assistance of that machinery whistled, with astonishing shrillness, to some pigeons at a considerable elevation in the air. Mrs. Richard's eldest, miss. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Susan, and the word of Mrs. Richard's life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as Polly had been to tell Florence of the resuscitated prospects of her son and heir, Florence was prepared for the meeting. So, a favorable moment presenting itself, they both hastened across, without any further contemplation of Mrs. Richard's bane that sporting character, unconscious of their approach, again whistled with his utmost might, and then yelled in a rapture of excitement, Strays! Whip! Strays! Apostrophe, which identification had such an effect upon the conscience-stricken pigeons, that instead of going direct to some town in the north of England, as appeared to have been their original intention, they began to wheel and falter, whereupon Mrs. Richard's firstborn pierced them with another whistle, and again yelled, in a voice that rose above the turmoil of the street, Strays! W-H-O-tilde-oop! Strays! Apostrophe, apostrophe, from this transport, he was abruptly recalled to terrestrial objects, by a poke from Miss Nipper, which sent him into the shop. Is this the way you show your penitence, when Mrs. Richards has been fretting for you months and months? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Susan, following the poke. Where's Mr. Gills? Apostrophe, Rob, who smoothed his first rebellious glance at Miss Nipper, when he saw Florence following, put his knuckles to his hair, in honor of the latter, and said to the former, that Mr. Gills was out, fetch him home, apostrophe said Miss Nipper, with authority, and say that my young lady's here. Apostrophe, I don't know where he's gone, apostrophe said Rob. Is that your penitence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Susan, with stinging sharpness. Why, how can I go and fetch him, when I don't know where to go? Apostrophe, apostrophe, whimpered the baited Rob. How can you be so unreasonable? Apostrophe, did Mr. Gill say when he should be home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Florence. Yes, miss, apostrophe, replied Rob, with another application of his knuckles to his hair. He said he should be home early in the afternoon, in about a couple of hours from now, miss. Apostrophe, is he very anxious about his nephew? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Susan. Yes, miss, apostrophe, returned Rob, preferring to address himself to Florence and Sliding Nipper. I should say he was, very much so. He ain't indoors, miss, not a quarter of an hour together. He can't settle in one place 5 minutes. He goes about, like a just like a stray, apostrophe, said Rob, stooping to get a glimpse of the pigeons through the window, and checking himself, with his fingers halfway to his mouth, on the verge of another whistle. Do you know a friend of Mr. Gill's, called Captain Cuttle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Florence, after a moment's reflection. Him with a hook, miss? Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Rob, with an illustrative twist of his left hand. Yes, miss. He was here the day before yesterday. Apostrophe, has he not been here since? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Susan. No, miss, apostrophe, returned Rob, still addressing his reply to Florence. Perhaps Walter's uncle has gone there, Susan, apostrophe, observed Florence, turning to her. To Captain Cuddles, miss? Apostrophe, apostrophe, interposed Rob. No, he's not gone there, miss. Because he left particular word, that if Captain Cuddle called, I should tell him how surprised he was, not to have seen him yesterday, and should make him stop till he came back. Do you know where Captain Cuddle lives? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Florence. Rob replied in the affirmative, and turning to a greasy parchment book on the shop desk, read the address aloud. Florence again turned to her maid, and took counsel with her in a low voice, while Rob the round-eyed, mindful of his patron's secret charge, looked on and listened. Florence proposed that they cold go to Captain Cuddle's house, hear from his own lips what he thought of the absence of any tidings of son and heir, and bring him, if they could, to comfort Uncle Sol. Susan at first objected slightly, on the score of distance, but a hackney coach being mentioned by her mistress, withdrew that opposition, and gave in her assent. There were some minutes of discussion between them, before they came to this conclusion, during which the staring Rob paid close attention to both speakers, and inclined his ear to each by turns, as if he were appointed arbitrator of the argument. In time, Rob was dispatched for a coach, the visitors keeping shop meanwhile, and when he brought it, they got into it, leaving word for Uncle Sol that they would be sure to call again, on their way back. Rob having stared after the coach until it was as invisible as the pigeons had now become, sat down behind the desk with a most assiduous demeanor, and in order that he might forget nothing of what had transpired, made notes of it on various small scraps of paper, with a vast expenditure of ink. There was no danger of these documents betraying anything, if accidentally lost, for long before a word was dry, it became as profound a mystery to Rob, as if he had had no part whatever in its production. While he was yet busy with these labors, the hackney coach, after encountering unheard of difficulties from swivel bridges, soft roads, impassable canals, caravans of casks, settlements of scarlet beans and little washhouses, and many such obstacles abounding in that country, stopped at the corner of Brig Plus. Alighting here, Florence and Susan Nipper walked down the street, and sought out the abode of Captain Cuddle. It happened by evil chance to be one of Mrs. McStinger's great cleaning days. On these occasions, Mrs. McStinger was knocked up by the policeman at 3:15 in the morning, and rarely such before 12 o'clock next night. The chief object of this institution appeared to be that Mrs. McStinger should move all the furniture into the back garden at early dawn, walk about the house in pattens all day, and move the furniture back again after dark. These ceremonies greatly fluttered those doves, the young McStingers, who were not only unable at such times to find any resting place for the soles of their feet, but generally came in for a good deal of pecking from the maternal bird during the progress of the solemnities. At the moment when Florence and Susan Nipper presented themselves at Mrs. McStinger's door, that worthy but redoubtable female was in the act of conveying Alexander McStinger, aged 2 years and 3 months, along the passage, for forcible deposition in a sitting posture on the street pavement. Alexander being black in the face with holding his breath after punishment, and a cool paving stone being usually found to act as a powerful restorative in such cases. The feelings of Mrs. McStinger, as a woman and a mother, were outraged by the look of pity for Alexander which she observed on Florence's face. Therefore, Mrs. McStinger, asserting those finest emotions of our nature, in preference to weakly gratifying her curiosity, shook and buffeted Alexander both before and during the application of the paving stone, and took no further notice of the strangers. "I beg your pardon, ma'am," apostrophe said Florence, when the child had found his breath again, and was using it. "Is this Captain Cuddle's house?" Apostrophe, "No," apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger. "Not number 9? Apostrophe asked Florence, hesitating. "Who said it wasn't number 9? Apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger. Susan Nipper instantly struck in, and begged to inquire what Mrs. McStinger meant by that, and if she knew whom she was talking to. Mrs. McStinger, in retort, looked at her all over. "What do you want with Captain Cuddle, I should wish to know?" Apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger. "Should you? Then I'm sorry that you won't be satisfied," apostrophe returned Miss Nipper. "Hush, Susan, if you please," apostrophe said Florence. "Perhaps you can have the goodness to tell us where Captain Cuddle lives, ma'am, as he don't live here." Apostrophe, "Who says he don't live here?" Apostrophe retorted the implacable McStinger. "I said it wasn't Cap'n Cuddle's house, and it ain't his house, and forbid it that it ever should be his house, for Cap'n Cuddle don't know how to keep a house, and don't deserve to have a house. It's my house, and when I let the upper floor to Cap'n Cuddle, oh, I do a thankless thing, and cast pearls before swine." Apostrophe, Mrs. McStinger pitched her voice for the upper windows in offering these remarks, and cracked off each clause sharply by itself, as if from a rifle possessing an infinity of barrels. After the last shot, the captain's voice was heard to say, in feeble remonstrance from his own room, "Steady below. Apostrophe, since you want Cap'n Cuddle, there he is." Apostrophe said Mrs. McStinger, with an angry motion of her hand. On Florence making bold to enter, without any more parley, and on Susan following, Mrs. McStinger recommenced her pedestrian exercise in pattens, and Alexander McStinger, still on the paving stone, who had stopped in his crying to attend to the conversation, began to wail again, entertaining himself during that dismal performance, which was quite mechanical, with a general survey of the prospect, terminating in the hackney coach. The captain in his own apartment was sitting with his hands in his pockets, and his legs drawn up under his chair, on a very small desolate island, lying about midway in an ocean of soap and water. The captain's windows had been cleaned, the walls had been cleaned, the stove had been cleaned, and everything the stove excepted was wet and shining with soft soap and sand, the smell of which dry sultry impregnated the air. In the midst of the dreary scene, the captain, cast away upon his island, looked round on the waste of waters with a rueful countenance, and seemed waiting for some friendly bark to come that way and take him off. But when the captain, directing his forlorn visage towards the door, saw Florence appear with her maid, no words can describe his astonishment. Mrs. McStinger's eloquence having rendered all other sounds but imperfectly distinguishable, he had looked for no rarer visitor than the potboy or the milkman. Wherefore, when Florence appeared, and coming to the confines of the island, put her hand in his, the captain stood up, aghast, as if he supposed her, for the moment, to be some young member of the Flying Dutchman's family. Apostrophe, instantly recovering his self-possession, however, the captain's first care was to place her on dry land, which he happily accomplished, with one motion of his arm. Issuing forth, then, upon the main, Captain Cuttle took Miss Nipper round the waist, and bore her to the island also. Captain Cuttle then, with great respect and admiration, raised the hand of Florence to his lips, and standing off a little, for the island was not large enough for three, beamed on her from the soap and water like a new description of Triton. "You are amazed to see us, I am sure," said Florence, with a smile. The inexpressibly gratified captain kissed his hook in reply, and growled, as if a choice and delicate compliment were included in the words, "Stand by! Stand by!" Apostrophe, but I couldn't rest, apostrophe, said Florence, without coming to ask you, what do you think about dear Walter, who is my brother now, and whether there is anything to fear, and whether you will not go, and console his poor uncle every day, until we have some intelligence of him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, at these words Captain Cuttle, as by an involuntary gesture, clapped his hand to his head, on which the hard glazed hat was not, and looked discomfited. "Have you any fears for Walter's safety?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Florence, from whose face the captain, so enraptured he was with it, could not take his eyes. While she, in her turn, looked earnestly at him, to be assured of the sincerity of his reply. "No, heart's delight, apostrophe, said Captain Cuttle, I am not afeard. Waller's a lad as'll go through a deal o' hard weather. Waller's a lad as'll bring as much success to that ere brig as a lad is capable on. Waller, apostrophe, said the captain, his eyes glistening with the praise of his young friend, and his hook raised to announce a beautiful quotation, is what you may call a outard, and visible sign of an inner and spirited grasp, and when found make a note of. Apostrophe, Florence, who did not quite understand this, though the captain evidently thought it full of meaning, and highly satisfactory, mildly looked to him for something more. "I am not afeard, my heart's delight," apostrophe, resumed the captain, "there's been most uncommon bad weather in them latitudes, there's no denying, and they have drove and drove, and been beat off, maybe t'other side the world. But the ship's a good ship, and the lad's a good lad, and it ain't easy, thank the Lord," apostrophe, the captain made a little bow, "to break up hearts of oak, whether they're in bricks or bosoms. Here we have 'em both ways, which is bringing it up with a round turn, and so I ain't a bit afeard as yet." Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.